is case number 59444, Esplanade Nevada LLC versus the District Court. And I guess we will proceed.
May it please the Court, my name is Randall Jones, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant. Good morning, Justice Hardesty, Justice Seda, Justice Pickering. It's actually nice to be here. I haven't been up here in a while, so nice to be up here. I have some handouts that I wanted to know if I could provide the court, if I applied directly or to the clerk.
To the clerk first. What do those, I presume that Mr. Sheehan has a copy of them as well?
He does, Your Honor, and Mr. Sheehan has provided me with some handouts that he would like to provide the court as well. So I assume there's no objection.
I would make that same assumption, Mr. Sheehan.
That would be safe. Would you like me to provide my handouts at the same time or wait till my argument?
Why don't we do that? Let's get them distributed to my colleagues and myself. There being no objection. And Ms. Cummings, you will, of course, reset the clock once those matters have been, or those documents have been distributed.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that indulgence.
It's okay. Take your time. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Justice Seda. Again, for the record, my name is Randall Jones. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, the Esplanade LLC, and I would ask if I may reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court, as this court is aware, this matter is up on a writ petition, and we are essentially asking the court to consider two things in this writ. The first issue is whether the district court in this decision violated this civil litigant's due process rights to fundamental fairness when it prevented this litigant from conducting discovery on non-privileged issues that were clearly highly relevant to the claims and affirmative defenses that were brought in the action. We've also asked the court to grant a mandamus relief from what we believe to be a blanket discovery order, which had the stated aim from the district court of preventing the appellant from turning this breach of contract case into a construction defect case, which we believe was an arbitrary and capricious act by the district court, which left my client with no plain, adequate, or speedy remedy. And I would start by saying that the district court, we got started with this case, and I say this with all due respect, I've known Judge Scan virtually my whole career, and I have great respect for her, and I've known Judge Delaney for some time as well. But it was clear from the outset there was a bias here. The bias was stated to be, and we went into business court intentionally. We filed this claim as a breach of contract claim, among other things, in business court. But, Your Honors, this is a breach of contract claim where the essence of the contract was whether or not the project that had been delivered had construction defects. So the essence of the claim of breach and proving that the breach occurred was whether or not there were construction defects at the time of the attempt to close or deliver the project at closing. So it's always been a breach of contract case of a construction contract. And both Judge Delaney and Judge Scan said on the record, we are not going to allow this case to turn into a construction defect case. So there was a clear bias. We don't want to be the construction defect judges. Those are other judges over there in Clark County, not us. We're the business court judges. We don't do construction defect cases. Well, it's impossible to handle this breach of contract case unless you're dealing with construction defect issues. Now, we're talking about a large project. There was 28 buildings, including a club, not including a clubhouse, or in addition to a clubhouse, and a total of 428 units. This was a contract for a turnkey project. And I want to address this issue up front with you all, that there, the contention of the respondent was essentially, look, the economy turned, the buyer made a bad deal, there was buyer's remorse, and they just wanted to get out of this project. And you're going to hear a lot about that, I'm sure, from Mr. Sheehan. But I would submit this to you all, that in a good market, you want to make sure you're buying the project that you intended to buy. In a down market, especially where the price you're paying may be overstated because of the change in the market conditions, the worst thing that you can do is then take possession of a project that is riddled with defects. So you want to be all the more sure that the project you're taking over, that you're accepting, is not defective. There could be nothing worse. You're adding, if you will, insult to injury to buy this project where it is clearly a very high purchase price for the market conditions, and the project has defects. So what I want to talk about is a little bit about the contract and why we believe that this blanket discovery rule to exclude my client from doing the discovery that they asked to do was completely inappropriate and a violation of Nevada law. So if you look at the first page of my handout, I'm showing the court some pages out of the contract itself where it says a builder promised a defect-free project. These were material terms of this contract. This was not a contract that says, yeah, you're going to build this this project and for X price. There was a bargain for condition precedent to the delivery of the project. And that was found in a number of places, including paragraph 8, where it's, the seller made affirmative representation. The seller warrants and represents the purchaser as of the date hereof, as of the closing date. Section 8, the improvements including the roof, fixtures, appliances, and all heating, cooling, plumbing, wiring, security, fire alarm, and other systems will be as of final completion as defined here in good repair and working condition. Now, why do I cite that specifically in this case? If you will look at those issues, because there's a couple of things going on here. One is the court said you're limited to issues you raised before this arbitrary closing date that the seller imposed when we weren't allowed to do the inspections we wanted to do and believe we were entitled to do. But the court said you're only entitled to do visual inspections. The contract does not give you the right to do anything other than visual inspections. But if you look at this paragraph, most of the items listed, heating, cooling, plumbing, wiring, security, fire alarm, they're all systems that are found behind the walls. In other words, they are latent type of systems that are built into the project. You cannot determine by a visual inspection whether or not they have been properly built. Then you get to the next paragraph, as of final, in paragraph 8I, as of final completion, as herein defined, there will not be a material structural or foundation defects, plumbing defects or deficiencies, nor electrical system defects or deficiencies in the improvements. Again, these provisions speak to items that by their very nature are systems that are behind the walls or that are covered up. They had an affirmative duty at closing to deliver a project that was free from defects in these areas, which clearly could only be determined by some invasive type of testing. And then conditions precedent to purchaser's obligations. The seller must deliver upon final completion of the property in substantial compliance with the plans for improvements described in Exhibit B. We ask for as-built plans, which are acknowledged before closing. They contend they were due at closing. Judge Scan found there was an ambiguity in the agreement, and she said, well, I'm going to rule that ambiguity against you because part of the agreement says that as-built would have to be delivered promptly after substantial completion, which occurred more than 6 months, actually more than 8 months, before this arbitrary closing date they imposed. And Your Honors, think of this. How is my client ever going to know if this project is built in compliance with the plans and specifications if they've only got the permitted set of plans? They have nothing to compare it to. They don't have the as-builts. And they were told categorically they could not get the as-builts until after the closing. So the point here is they kept asking and asking for inspections. They were told repeatedly, we're not going to give you that. And so on the date of the closing, my client finally filed the lawsuit. If you look at the next page, these are the rights to inspect. And I don't want to belabor this, but it talks about things like in the first paragraph we've cited here, and we've got cites to the
But before you move on to the right to inspect, under paragraph 12E, could you address your opponent's argument that you didn't give adequate notice of their noncompliance with the contract to trigger your right to terminate?
Yeah, the way I would address it, I think it is probably most relevant to this court, is the order from Judge Scan that was actually written by Judge Delaney that she ultimately added some language to in a new paragraph. It's a petitioner's appendix at 823, where she actually says that what rights to inspect, these are the issues, the relevant issues that Judge Delaney found. What rights to inspect were asserted prior to the termination of the agreement on August 25? Whether any rights to inspect properly raised prior to that date were improperly interfered with by Fifth and Centennial? Whether or not, if there were any rights to inspect improperly interfered with, the requested inspections would have ultimately revealed a material defect going to the essence of the agreement. So the best answer that I can give you is that the court itself found that these were issues of fact that needed to be decided by a jury. We have no distinction, no explanation, no change of facts that occurred between the issuance of this order and the ultimate death sentence that the court imposed when it granted summary judgment on specific performance, which happened after the issue or the orders that we had were challenging here today. So we know the prejudice that has occurred. The court found there were issues of fact, the very point you raised, Justice Pickering. Then, without any explanation and certainly no additional discovery, the court arbitrarily then said, well, you know what, forget what I said before, that those were issues of fact. I'm going to just decide them now, and you lose. The other points that, since I'm probably not going to get a chance to do that and reserve my time, I did want to talk about the other things that I've attached. These are the things that we have actually asked for before the court issued the summary judgment so that it did. We asked for discovery of life safety, disability accessibility, plumbing, building envelope, foundation. We asked for the next page, discovery requested but denied by the court, inspections and testing not allowed. All these different tests we were allowed, and just to talk about invasive testing, we were supposed to post $1 million bond. We posted that bond. That's uncontroverted. Why is there a bond to be posted if the agreement contemplates that during the inspections you're going to disturb the tenants to some extent, you're going to cause some property damage, and you're required to post a bond of $1 million to cover for that. Additionally, invasive testing, I'll give you a perfect example. We went in and were allowed to look at three units out of 428 to see in the attic space. We only got to look at three. We asked for four. They finally said, no, you can't see the fourth one. When we looked at two of the three that we got into, we found two major life safety issues. Penetrations in the firewalls, where the pipes going through our rated firewall, and sprinkler heads that were either missing or in the wrong direction. Those are life safety issues, and I would also suggest that materiality, the stairs alone, and this is something where the court decided these were not material to defects we did list. The stairs alone were estimated to be between $6.8 and $13.6 million to repair in these three-story buildings. That's between 8.2 and 16.3% of the total purchase price. That in and of itself is a material change. We were asked to do this discovery.
Mr. Jones, if I could, Mr. Jones, I want to interrupt your observations about the defects and return to the question that Justice Pickering asked. Maybe I didn't understand the response, so I'm going to ask for further clarification.
Sure.
What excused your client's obligation to give notice of the defects prior to your August 26, 2010 letter and an opportunity to cure?
That's an interesting question.
Is it a stipulated fact that no such notice was given?
No, it is not, Justice Hardesty, but I would say it this way. One, the very first notice referenced paragraph 12E in the first letter that went back in December of 2009 and said, we believe that until these material defects and potential defects are corrected, we cannot close. They went out and fixed one of those defects, according to them, which was the roofs. They fixed it on their own, but we now have proof they did it without getting permits, which it was a permitted repair, and they never got the permits. So that was an issue that continued to remain open before the closing date. And here was the conundrum.
And that letter also references a denial of a right of inspection.
It did. And here's the conundrum my client was facing. We never said, up until that final day, the day we finally filed the lawsuit, we are giving you notice, because think of the situation we were put in. We're not going to let you inspect, so you can't give us the notice, and then we're going to hold it against you that you didn't give us the notice, so that you can't ever claim there was a breach by us.
So the letter you point to is the one dated December 15th, 2009.
Yes, that's
as
correct.
Satisfying 12E.
Well, that was one of many letters, and so here's the point, that we continued to ask for the right to do this, and we didn't ask for the closing date. They claimed the closing date. They set a closing date, knowing we felt we had never had our opportunity to inspect. So it's, how can you give notice of defects, and you don't want to do it piecemeal. You clearly don't want to do it piecemeal. You don't want to say, well, here's a few things, without getting the full right to inspect going in. So that's the difficulty that we believe that we were faced with, and it was a setup. That's from our perspective, that's what happened. But it doesn't go to the issue of whether a court can arbitrarily, under any circumstance, say, just no discovery. And that's the ultimate issue. Thank you, and I apologize for going over.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Mr. Sheehan.
Good morning, Justices. This is a very simple case. I think you guys have gotten it. It's not a construction defect case. It's a breach of contract case. Their first line of their complaint says, we want to invalidate the contract. The contract says, in order for you to terminate, you must provide a notice and opportunity to cure. Remember, we're signing this contract 2.5 years earlier for $83 million. Of course, if they want to terminate this contract later, when the property goes from $83 million to $43 million, we want to have the right to cure whatever minor defect or whatever defect is there.
What about a breach of the right to inspect under the contract? Is it your position that paragraph 12E applies to a breach of the duty to afford inspection rights? And if so, explain to me why that works under the agreement.
Two points. First of all, remember, this is a writ about discovery, all right? So the issue today is whether they were denied any right to discovery. Now, there's no discovery that's necessary to determine what right to inspect they had. The lower court found that they had the right to conduct visual inspections. And the reason they said that is because of the contract.
But your argument that they don't deserve discovery is premised on your position that they committed the first breach under 12E by not giving you proper notice. And my question is different. Is it your contention that 12E applies to a failure to afford inspection?
No. My position is the same position that Judge Delaney and Judge Scan both took, which is that under paragraph 7 of the agreement, it says you may enter the property. Okay? That's all the rights they have here. They have the right to enter the property at all times. They have the right to see this property going up. All right? They could have 10 people out there at all times. He says we don't want to see behind the walls. Well, they had the right to go have somebody up there and see the property as the property was going up. And they chose to do whatever they wanted to. But you can't use the discovery process to give you a right that you don't have under the contract. Judge Delaney said it best when and it's behind tab 8 that I've given you there in front of the chair. But Mr. Jones What you are arguing is because the contract said they're going to deliver property free of material defects, that in turn creates a whole process of inspection prior to the close. That simply isn't built into the contract. And then if you turn over to the next page, she says, I simply do not find that whether you want to call it for policy reasons or whatever, that we can read this contract, a reasonable reading of this contract, to say that the inspection should have been allowed at the time of close with the type of destructive inspections that are being requested now. But more importantly, Your Honor, not only are we right on the point, but if we didn't give them the right to inspect, they still had to give us the 30-day notice and say, if you don't let us conduct this destructive testing, we are going to terminate the contract in 30 days.
Well, let me then, you're right on my point, because the December 15, 2009 letter that was referenced says, point blank, that we understand in an effort to explore these discoveries further as representatives from, and I'll butcher the pronunciation, the experts, have contacted the seller to make arrangements for testing and inspection, but have not been successful. We trust you will expedite that process. Why is that not a 30-day demand to please let us inspect this? I mean,
But Your Honor, all the cases that we cited say you must specifically say, if you do not allow this, we are going to terminate the contract in 30 days. That's what our contract says here, too. So you've got three arguments on your point there, Your Honor. Number one, the contract doesn't allow destructive testing. Okay. Number two, they didn't give us notice about the destructive testing and tell us they were going to terminate the contract beforehand. Number
three. Might have given you one part of that. You would agree at least that the first part of that they gave you some notice in the December 15th letter.
No, they didn't. The contract says you must give us a notice and tell us that if we don't comply in 30 days, we're going to terminate the contract.
It's a conjunctive. I get that. But my comment was quite simply that you have to acknowledge that this letter gives you first part of that, notice or a request to inspect.
Fair enough. But number three, it's discovery. Okay. This issue is about discovery here. But more than that, if I could just ask you, if you really want to talk about the merits of that, if I could ask you to turn behind tab number 8. And this is the testimony, it's Record on Appeal 87. This is the testimony from their person. This is the only person that negotiated the contract on their behalf. And this is the only person that was out there on a daily basis. You can see that in the little thing. He was the one that was in charge of papering the deal. Now, if you turn over to the second page there, page 147, my question, this is their person. Did you believe you had the right, after the construction was completed, to open walls to see whether there were any problems inside the walls? No. And that's based on your understanding of the contract as you read and negotiated. Yes. Next page over. This is their person. And you certainly would not have required Pacerin to open walls for third parties to inspect or spray windows or do any other type of invasive testing, correct? I wouldn't have expected to do that, no. If you turn over to the next page. If you build a house and you build it for me, and I agreed I will buy it a year from now, in the meantime, you said, okay, I'm going to put a renter in there. You rent the house to someone a year. Because remember, these things were up and going for a year. And also, take into context that 6 months before this, they came to us and said, the price of the property has gone down so much, you need to give us a price break. We said no. They go to hire some experts. The experts come out there and they write a report that says we need to do some additional tests. They didn't find anything wrong with it visually, but they said, but we suspect some things might be wrong here and we want to do some additional testing. But this is an observation report, not repairs. But again, this is their own person testifying here. Would you expect to be able to go in behind the walls? No, that would not be fair. So as to your point, Your Honor, several points. Number one, their own person said it wasn't part of the contract. The contract doesn't give them that right. They never gave us any notice and opportunity to cure on that. Maybe they gave us notice. I'll grant you that point. But they didn't comply with the contract on that point. And lastly, there's no discovery now on that issue. All the discovery about what rights we gave them is done. The court below said, as a matter of law, you didn't have the right to do that. We're not here today to determine the legal issues that the court below decided. We're here on discovery. And that's why I appreciate it. If you quickly go to the first page of what I've given you there, which is the order granting partial summary judgment that the court granted, and I think this makes it kind of clear. All right. And the reason that I bring this out is, okay, this case is done now. We've got a decision here. And there's nothing, no amount of discovery that could be relevant to any of this, the facts or legal conclusions that they have that Judge Scan based her decision on. They're all sound. But again, if you disagree on the law, that's not what we're here for today. The question is, if on any of these facts that she came up with or any of these conclusions of the law, could any discovery illuminate anything further? And the answer is no, which is why this writ needs to be denied. Now, they're going to be back here. They're going to appeal. And they're going to bring up a whole bunch of issues, which is why I'm a little surprised that we're here today on a writ, because it's going to be a piecemeal. But let's just go down this thing.
Has final judgment been entered in the district court?
Only thing that's left is attorney's fees, and we're waiting for this order right here, but we're done.
So the answer is no?
The answer is no. Yes. All right, number one, the contract was entered into, the statement of facts here on page RA-627. Obviously no discovery in that. Number two, they agreed to pay $83 million. No discovery in that. Number four, the default provisions. In the event of a material default by seller under this agreement, which remains uncured after 30 days written notice, which is be sent simultaneously to lender, purchaser in its sole and absolute discretion shall have the right to either terminate this agreement. Then the second paragraph down, same thing, 12E. Now, you might have noticed in their brief, in their writ, they cited 12E, and the only thing they cited was the first sentence. They didn't cite the notice and cure provisions. Why do you think that is? Because the notice and cure provisions kills them. But continuing on, there's no discovery that could be relevant to that. Next one down, rather than close, Esplanade terminated the party's agreement. That's the key to the case, Your Honors. They terminated the agreement without providing notice. At that point, they were in breach, and that's what the court found. If they had just closed on the property, there's two possibilities on August 26th when they were supposed to close. Either they knew of a defect, in which case they had to give us 30-day notice and opportunity to cure, or they didn't have a defect known at that time, in which case they had the duty to close. You can't terminate the agreement and then sue us and then try to use the discovery process to come up with a reason for the termination. You can't use the discovery process to come up with a reason after the fact, which is why Judge Delaney's original order was, look, you're allowed to do discovery on everything up to August 26th, but you can't use the discovery process now to come up with things that you didn't raise before August 26th. Quite frankly, that order, and so they were allowed to do all kinds of discovery in this case, but quite frankly, that order was an error because they shouldn't have been allowed to do any discovery because until they show that they provided us the notice, they shouldn't have been allowed to do any discovery. But continuing on, because again, all you have to do is take a look at this order here and say, could discovery illuminate any of these facts or legal arguments? The next one down, rather than closing the property, Esplanade terminated the party's agreement. The next one down, six, prior to terminating the party's agreement, Esplanade wrote a series of letters to Fifth expressing a concern that there may be construction defects at the property and requesting additional destructive or invasive testing to determine the existence of defects. We know that. There's no discovery that can add anything to that. We know what those letters are. And they certainly had the right to do discovery and what notices they gave. Of course, they gave those notices, so there is no discovery necessary. All right, next one. Fifth allowed Esplanade onto the property at least five separate days to conduct visual inspections. Next one, number eight, I've got it circled there. None of the correspondence which took place before or after these inspections contained language notifying Fifth that it was a material default of the party's agreement, nor does it specifically notify Fifth and its lender that absent a cure of the default within 30 days, Esplanade would terminate the party's agreement. You both asked Mr. Jones, tell me where you sent a note, a letter, saying if you don't cure this within 30 days, we're going to terminate the contract. He evaded the question. He did the same thing in front of Judge Scan and Judge Delaney. All right, so all those questions of fact, no discovery could illuminate on any of those things. Now, if you look at the conclusions of law, number one, the court reaffirms its
prior ruling. Mr. Sheehan, the order you're reading from is not an issue in this writ.
Well, it is because it shows you that in order to get to the final decision in this matter, no discovery is necessary or relevant. These things, this order sets forth all the facts and all the conclusions of law that the court needed to know in order to reach its decision, and no discovery could add anything to any of these statements of fact or conclusions of law, is the point.
Well, I understand your comment, but it seems to me that the focus of the writ is whether the Esplanade, if that's the correct pronunciation, has been deprived its due process right to establish or conduct discovery before that order was entered. The propriety of that order is not something this court should reach, and this writ is my point.
And agreed, and that's the whole point here, that because there was a notice and right to cure, you never get to the defect issue. If they had given us a notice and right to cure, and we hadn't done that, and there was a dispute whether we had to do it, then maybe discovery.
I'm not even sure that the propriety of the notice, the quality of it, or the absence of the quality of it is an issue that's in this writ either. This seems to me to be a garden variety writ about the judge didn't allow me discovery.
Well, again, discovery, the judge didn't allow them discovery on everything up until August 26th, but she said you can't go on a fishing expedition to try to create reasons for a breach by doing discovery now. But more importantly than that, Judge Scan and Judge Delaney said, look, until you show us that you gave them the notice and right to cure on a particular issue, none of this is relevant. Because unless you gave the notice and right
to
cure.
We entertain writs occasionally because there is judicial economy in doing so.
Sure, of course.
And one thing that is raised in this case is whether, because of judicial economy, maybe that alone, the court should intervene in this discovery dispute. What's your view about that?
I do not believe so, because, again, this is going to come back up here. But we've had two judges, Judge Delaney and Judge Scan. But not only that, the sound reasoning on both of them is, listen, the document says in order for you to have a right to terminate, you must provide the notice and opportunity to cure. Until you show us a notice and opportunity to cure, then all of these things are irrelevant, because the case law is crystal clear that if there's a notice and right to cure, you must strictly comply with that notice and right to cure. And if you don't strictly comply with that notice and right to cure, you've waived your claims. I would ask the court to, and I'm sure you already have, read all those cases that say, if you don't give the notice and right to cure.
I guess the point I'm making is, or the question I'm asking is, I'm a little uncomfortable resolving the legal question about the propriety of the notice in the context of a discovery dispute.
Which, again, is there is no discovery that is relevant to the notice and right to cure issue other than what notice and right to cure were given. And
but if there were a duty to afford inspection that was theoretically breached, and I have no way of knowing what your full record shows, and that breach excused the notice and right to cure of substantive defects, then to show materiality of the breach of the right to inspection, they would be tasked with showing that had they been afforded that right, it would have yielded something. So you come full circle to the discovery dispute. And that's what's troubling me about this case and why I do believe the contract terms are relevant, because we have to put in order what were the reason for the limitations the court put on the discovery. So I'm still puzzled about how you answer that point. If there was a breach of the duty to afford inspection, where are you?
Again, it's addressed in my brief. The contract itself does not give them the right to do destructive testing. Their own person who...
So your point is there's no colorable showing of a right, of a breach of the right of the duty to inspect, to afford inspection rights.
Absolutely. And I just read you the quotes from Judge Delaney. Judge Scan said the same thing. So
well, I understand their quotes, but more importantly, your point is under this contract.
Read paragraph 7. It doesn't give them the right to do destructive or invasive testing. Read the testimony from their own person who negotiated the contract. They got to see it going up. They had that opportunity to see it going up. At the end of the day, you get to turn on the lights, you get to run the water, you get to do everything else. When you go to buy a home, do you get to tell the person when you're going to go buy the home, I want to, you know, drill into this wall? No, you get to do all those other things. But the important point here is that they breached the contract when they terminated without providing the notice. At that point, they're the breaching party. And so the case law says, therefore, then any defects are irrelevant because they're the first one that breached. And that's what the court's order said. This discovery is irrelevant because they didn't provide the notice. That makes all of this irrelevant. Now, there would be an exception.
Mr. Sheehan, you're out of time, so I'm going to ask you to please conclude that thought, not that argument.
No, I understand that if they did have the right to do destructive testing under the contract, that there might be an issue here. But again, the court ruled, two judges ruled as a matter of law, they did not have that right. The contract didn't provide them that right. Their own witness testified they didn't have that right. And common sense says they don't have that right.
Thank you, Mr. Sheehan. Mr. Jones, 2:30 in rebuttal because we interrupted you at the close of your reserve time and we gave Mr. Sheehan additional time. So 2:30.
Thank you very much. Let me just address this notice of cure issue because obviously that's somewhat troubling. I know it troubled the district court. Here's the problem. This is a blanket discovery ruling. And I totally disagree with Mr. Sheehan. The district court did not give us the right to do this discovery up to a certain point in time. Both judges said, we're not letting you do that. And if you think there's discovery issues, we're talking about Rule 26B. In all my years of practice, I've never seen a court limit a litigant's ability, once they're in litigation, to do discovery. And nothing like this. This is categorical. And think about it. The discovery on the cure issue is relevant to determine, and we put these in our briefs, issues of futility, prevention, the prevention doctrine, repudiation. Those are all issues which, at one point, Judge Delaney found to be relevant with respect to the notice. And without explanation, and certainly without any new discovery, all of a sudden, those are no longer relevant, and the court can grant summary judgment. So even as to the notice, discovery was not allowed, period. We've got a list there of all the things we asked to do that were specifically denied, including motions to compel and motions for reconsideration. They were denied across the board. But let me ask you this, or point this out to you as well. We had an affirmative claim, or excuse me, an affirmative defense to their counterclaim for a setup, the contract price. The judge said, no, I'm not going to let you do discovery on that. That, and then when we tried within the scheduling order, we moved to amend our complaint to make it an affirmative claim in our complaint, not just an affirmative defense. And we quoted in our brief where Judge Scan said, no, I'm not going to let you do that, because if I let you do that, then discovery of the construction defects will be relevant. It's astounding to me. The court said, I'm not going to let you amend, and this court knows what the liberal rules of amendment are in this jurisdiction. She said, and we did it within the time frames allowed by the court, she said, no, because if you do that, I cannot justify how I would deny you the right to do discovery on these issues.
So are you making the point that as a discretionary matter, this writ should be denied because it's going to come up on a final summary judgment anyway, and as a prudential matter, we should not be hearing it piecemeal?
No, I would say, I'll tell you exactly why that's not true. The only thing that's left, if I could just answer that last
Please,
question.
You may.
The only thing that's left is a specific performance. The court has ordered my client, subject to this writ, to close on this property. And has said, in the order, my client will assume the $60 million loan. That bank is not a party to this litigation. If my client is required to assume a $60 million loan, what is there to appeal? This court has no jurisdiction or authority to tell the bank that, by the way, that loan is not enforceable against that litigant because Judge Scan made a mistake, an error, in ordering that the specific performance to go forward. So there is clearly an inadequate remedy at law. My client will not be able to appeal. It will not be able to deal with that issue if it's forced to assume a loan that it doesn't want to assume and never got the opportunity to do discovery to show why it shouldn't assume that loan. That's the problem we're facing. Anyway, thank you very much, and I appreciate the indulgence on the time.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Thank you, Mr. Sheehan. This matter will stand submitted. The court will be in recess until this afternoon at 1:30.
All rise.